Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
We're sounding more like each other. We've got a great one today, dude.
Who's that? Who we got?
From whose line is it anyway? Don't get excited. It's not Wayne Brady. No, but from Whose Line Is It Anyway? And the Smartest Man in the World podcast. It's Greg Proops.
Woohoo!
Longtime friend. Longtime friend of mine. He is also one of the two heads in the, you know, the two-headed commentator and the pod race sequence of Phantom Menace, but let's not hold that against him. He's so smart, and I'm pretty sure all of his answers today are going to be improvised.
Can't wait, dude.
It's Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Let's go to work. Hello, Greg Proops.
Yeah.
Hello, Doug Benson and Wide World of Doug's people.
Yeah, other Doug here as well.
Yeah, we got our co-host, Doug Mellard. Have the two of you guys
Doug
met?
Mellard. Hi, Doug Mellard.
Probably at a Tiger Lily show or something, I'm sure, or Doug Loves Movies, but it's been a minute.
It's good to see you, Doug.
You too.
Or it's good to see your picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go audio only on this thing because, you know, the listeners don't get pictures. So why should we? Great to have you here, Greg.
Thank you, Dougies.
How is it going? How's, you know, as things open back up, how's that treating you?
Well, I was anxious because I felt like, you know, 3-4 months ago, we were told to never leave the house or we'd die. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, everybody, do whatever you like. And so I was a little, maybe I'm a little overly cautious. I was out the other day and I get a little nervous sometimes.
But
I mean, I'm glad because I've gone out with Jennifer now and we've eaten outside like 2 or 3 times and we hadn't eaten out a meal since, March last year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just a bold new thing to even go outside and eat. So I'm excited about that part. I still don't trust people enough to think that they're going to do the right thing. And so, you know, when I start touring again, there's that issue, like, you know, so I don't mean to be a bummer about it. I'm sure it's a comedy show, but like when something as devastating as what we've just gone through or what we're going through still is going on, I don't see that normal as like a real big option. I think you and I had this discussion a few months ago, Doug Benson, why were 50,000 people dying of the flu every year, which we could have avoided if everyone had worn masks, and then to find out people weren't washing their hands all the time, like, yuck.
Right.
So I wasn't a mask person, but now I'm going to be. But having to travel so much and be in an airplane or a car or a bus or a train or whatever every day and theaters and clubs, I'm always washed my hands and carried those little foil pouches of alcohol because some planes you're on don't even have like a sink. They're so small. Yeah. And airports are filthy. So I was always kind of super conscious about that. But I've really enjoyed not having a cold or a flu in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been crazy that it's been that easy to not have a cold or flu is to, you know, stay away from people.
Yeah. I mean, right. It took a zillion, you know, 5 million people in the world to die to learn this, but yes, I intend on wearing my mask on planes and in any kind of public thing like that for a good long time until.
Yeah. Planes are a great, I mean, masks would have been great, a great idea to begin, you know, before the pandemic, just because, you know, you're just cooped up with people. I know they say that it's the, you know, best air out there, but
it's not. There's no way.
You know, it still just trips me out that, you know, you have to be confined with people for so long. And just also, I mean, it's just better for, like, if you're going to be napping anyway, why do you want your stupid mouth hanging open?
No.
You know,
I agree.
Think everybody looks better with their masks on. I think
they do. That's the other thing. It hides a world of hurt, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
It really does. More people have, I think it's funny. People have, you could, if they had to just get by on eyes, people are all pretty good looking. You can see the rest of the face that you go, okay.
When you effectively cut off half of people's faces, they are much better looking. It's true. I am. It hides my double chin. It's great. I mean, you know, I went to in 2019, or as we now will we refer to anything before last year as the before days, or I've heard that anytime you say last year, you mean 2019.
Wow, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So last year, I went to Tokyo with the Nightmare Before Christmas, which you've seen, Doug, the live show that we do, and it's really, really fun. And one of our singers, Fletcher, who I've known for years, wears this elaborate mask on the plane, right, to Tokyo, which is a long ass flight. You know, it's like England or whatever. It's 12 hours, 10 hours. And I called him Kane the whole way, right? Or Bane, rather. I called him Bane the whole way, you know. And then I'd see him wearing it in the dress room. It was this really giant oxygen-y mask thing. And then, of course, we realize now how right he was to do that, because he's a great singer and he sings in a real high register. And you can't lose that, right? And the one thing on a plane is you're going to dry out, you know. For singers, they dry out. And also, people in Asia already understood that you should wear masks. And you already saw them, particularly like when you go to Vancouver, places like that with a giant Asian population, everybody's wearing one. And I always thought, oh, I don't need to wear one. And now I feel like I've let the team down and I'm going to wear one.
Yeah, we were all just selfish Americans. Right?
Well, that's the thing. The first people that put them on, you know, in other countries are the sick, you know, whereas, you know, here we're told, oh, no, you still have to come to work and you still have to do your job. And, what you know, you probably some people would get yelled at for wearing masks at work, you know, outside of the pandemic. But they really help.
Yeah.
It's wild.
SARS was a real serious issue when it happened, and it was in Canada too. So I don't remember wearing a mask in Canada, but I remember traveling in Canada during SARS. And, you know, that's how it was transmitted. And so they kind of dealt with that. And while we didn't, as usual, but we're, you know, the idea that it's hampering your freedom is hilarious. That's like saying that you can't run people over in a crosswalk because hampering your freedom to drive.
Well, that's true though. That's just a fact. You can't drive away. So we talk a lot about names on this show because it's a wide world of Dougs, and Greg/Gregory is I think name wise I feel like that's kind of a cousin to Doug. I think you probably have a lot of the same issues that Dougs have.
Well, my assumption is you get your names get, are you Doug or are you Douglas?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the misspelling, which is hilarious, like two G's at the end. I get Greg Gaga all the time. And I've only met maybe in my entire life one or two people with two G's at the end of their Greg. So I don't even understand where people get it from because it's not that common.
Yeah. I just think it's just, you know, it's derivative of like the word egg. You know,
right.
I think if they already work in a restaurant, they write, you know, EG, why wouldn't you write another G? You know, I don't know. I don't understand, you know, because that's what the Doug and I experience all the time is they write dough. They add an H. It does it. Why?
or if you're in England, that would be pronounced duff.
Right.
So, but the name, Greg is like in a loud bar when you, when someone asks you your name, they're going to mishear it a few times. Right.
Yeah.
And so yeah, go ahead.
We get misheard.
I get Gary and I get Jeff all the time.
Oh, wow.
People turn me into Jeff Probst because I think of Jeff Probst maybe. I've always been called Jeff. And I mean, my last name is already a nightmare. I'm one R away from disaster. So.
Well, you know, or, you know, you're one, you know, one less O and everybody's giving you props.
Right. I like when people go, they'll say to me, how do you pronounce your name? Cause they're so worried. And then I'll go Proops. And they're like, oh, like it was an alternate. There's somehow, it's pronounced Schitz and Pluffer. It's just spelled.
They're terrified that the R might be silent.
Right. They're relieved. And I'm like, and then I'll say it rhymes with troops as in support the Proops. And then they go, oh, right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But Greg, I get Craig, and Craig, I've always hated. I don't hate people named Craig, but I just don't, I'm not fond of the name Craig. And my name is Gregory. And the only people, I'm sure this happens to you and your family, that call you by your full name or your family.
Yeah.
My family all calls me, and with two syllables, by the way, Gregory, not Gregory.
Yeah.
They call me, I know that I'm talking to a family member because I'm Gregory.
I'm stuck on what Craig is short for now. Is it short for Gregory?
Right? No, I don't think so. And there's so Craig.
Where did it come
and
from? Why is it?
There's also Greg with a G-R-A-I-G.
What?
There's a few alternate Craigs and Gregs in there. Yeah, I know. You know, like, it's not particularly Jewish. Because there were 25 popes, I think, named Gregory. Dozens of popes named Gregory. Let's see. Craig means rock. It's a Gaelic name.
Mm.
And that's Craig with an A-I-G.
Yeah.
Huh. What's Greg? Is Greg, what is it? Watchful. That's
rock
alert. Yeah. Greg, Gregor, Gregorio, Gregoire. John Cooper Clark, the poet, who has a heavy Mancunian accent, who's English, he says, Gregoire. He always calls me Gregoire and calls my wife Jennifer. And I have another buddy who's always called me Gregor, as in Gregor Mendel, the great botanist. And then... in San Francisco, I got a lot of names, which is where we first met. And I was Proop Dog, Proopadopoulos. Johnny Steele always called me Proopadopoulos, Proop Monkey. So I've kept a lot of them as time has worn on.
It's, you know, it doesn't hurt to have extras, you know, standing by when you're, you know, referring to yourself and you're tired of your own name.
Right. I call myself the Proop Kitten. And if I get heckled, I will say to the heckler, you so don't want to get Western with the Proop Kitten. Because I will, as LL Cool J said, crush you like a jelly bean.
I got to adapt some form of a comeback with hecklers. That's way cooler than anything I've ever said.
Right? You do not want to get Western. Although I remember doing, do you remember that show Tough Crowd, Doug's?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Colin Quinn.
They would always bring me on to be the liberal, right? And this was in the Bush days. This was the W days. And everybody would be, you know, kind of bushy. And there was this air of aggression on the show. It was a real New York like dude show where like they'd come at you. And because I talk the way I do and I'm effeminate, and I'm obviously a West Coast, you know, pot smoking liberal. They were always nice to me. I got along with everybody. I got in a few fights, but it was all forgiven after. They would come at you like real aggressive, and I would get called Jim J. Bullock within 2 seconds of the show starting or something, you know, some reference to that. Clearly my sexuality was a real effort for them. And but one guy I remember, and I can't remember his name, he was an East Coast type, but he was junior grade. He wasn't even at the Jim Norton, you know, level of expertise. I was fussing with my tie before we went on camera. And he goes, "Oh, you fixing your tie, huh? You gonna fix your little fucking tie?" This is while we're, you know, this isn't on the break, right? So I turned to him and I said, "You know what? I'm real smart. And what's gonna happen is if you fuck with me, I'm gonna make you cry on camera. You got that? Because I'm real fucking clever and you will fucking cry, okay?" And he shut the fuck up and never said another word to me the whole show. But I just turned to him and went, like, "I'm brilliant and I will make you cry. Do you understand? Cry." And he like, and I thought, yeah, well, so much for the, but I love that, right? Like he was going to fuck with me like, "Oh, you fucking, yeah, you fussing with your fucking thigh, right? Hey, you fucking," and I was like, "Are you joking?"
He's like trying to get in your head pre-show and
right? Back. And then they used to do this thing. This is always a Republican talking point, which is where was that in the news? Like, so somehow if they missed it, then it was so right, that the fact was buried. And I remember it was, this was during Iraq or something. And it was some scandalous thing. And I had read about it. And actually, when people read newspapers, that's how long ago the show was, in USA Today or something, right? When you're on the road, they'd give you USA Today at the hotel. Remember that?
Yeah.
And one of the producers says to me, "Oh, really? Where was that in the paper?" And I went, "Page 14 of USA Today." Because I had just read it that morning. And of course, that stops them dead. Because then it's like they can't argue with you anymore and it's not any fun. But I always thought that was hilarious. Why would you do a comedy show where you aggressively attacked everybody?
Yeah.
When the point of comedy is that we're a team and we all, like, I'm on another show like that people have heard of called Whose Line, where we don't do that to each other.
Yeah.
We actually throw the ball to each other. As you know, we might throw it hard, but we're throwing the ball to each other. So like, no one ever goes, I don't ever go like, "Hey, Wayne, you fucking dick." You know, like, why would you do that when you're in it on a team? You know, well, comedy's a team sport. As soon as you put two comics together, we have to help each other.
Well, get ready for the second half of the show. We're going to get this real mean.
And I know that the show is called Tough Crowd, so that was the premise. I get it. But still... What made me laugh too about that show was, I don't know why I'm talking about something. When I first started doing it, they gave you this giant brief, was 6-7 pages long, and it was all printed out and it was all the topics you were going to go over and all the news stories behind them. And then by the end of the show, like 5 years into it, they just never, you know what, they'd hand it to you and you'd never see it again or talk about it again. I was like, oh. So that the idea was really never to cover topics. It was so that they could call me Jim J. Bullock.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I mean, you know, it worked in its weird way when all the guys are just sitting there all just equally insulting each other. You know, that crew can be pretty entertaining when that happens. But, you know, I can, you know, hear that on Sirius XM or something.
Here's one you like. We were walking out of the building and it was on what, 9th and something, I can't remember where they shot it, and at the Comedy Central studio in New York. Like, I want to say it was in Chelsea. Anyway, we were walking outside after the show and I was with Colin Quinn and I lit up a joint, you know, and this was like 2004 or whatever. He turns to me and goes, "Jesus Christ, Proops, this isn't fucking San Francisco." And that made me cry laughing. But only a person from San Francisco would light a joint up on the street.
Yeah, yeah. What about Dougs? Have you known many Dougs in your life?
Yeah, I have I don't know if you have these kind of members of your family. In my family, there's a bunch of people that are in my family that we're not related to, but somehow they're in our family. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know whether they're adopted in or it just happened.
Right.
my wife's ex-husband, my sister's ex-husband has a guy in his family named Doug, and they're clearly not related. I think they adopted him or something. Anyway, he's my, I call him my cousin, but I didn't even know if I'm related to him.
Right.
And, you know, I see him every few years. He comes to a show and his name's Doug. So there's one Doug, and then you're Doug Benson. You've probably been the Doug I've known the most of all, the Doug I've dug the most.
That's what happens on this show. Everybody I invite to come on, I'm like basically the
top Doug,
biggest Doug in their life.
Right. And then I have a cousin, Doug, who's a Pruce, and was a doctor. I have a lot of, on my, the Pruce side, a lot of accomplished relatives. My cousin Doug was a doctor. My cousin Carol's a psychiatrist. My cousin Michael is a CPA, and my cousin Russell's a successful business person, and I'm a comedian. So if you want to get Jewish about it, all we're missing is a violin player. If you have a psychiatrist, a CPA, a comedian, literally all we're missing is a conductor. So my cousin Doug, he is very thin and sometimes sported a beard. So he had a slightly rabbinical cast to his mien. And then people see us together and be like, oh God, there's someone named Proops that looks like you. He's whip thin and really healthy. That's the big difference. I drink like I was just released from hell. And he is always cautioning me to not be as big of a
drinker. Even after the pandemic? Come on.
Right? I don't know if the pandemic increased my drinking or just made it more focused.
Yeah, it's with purpose now.
Oh God.
I've been forced to get into mixed drinks that, you know, that I make myself, you mm-hmm. know, like the bartender has been taken out of the equation, you know, but yeah. Also there's more like pre-mixed drinks on the market, both from, you know, delivery from restaurants and in stores. So I've been, playing around with a lot of that as well.
It's true because we don't have our bartenders to look after us. And on that note, I bought some tonic water the other day at the supermarket, and I made a vodka and tonic, and I complained to my wife, this is what's happening in the world, that I didn't like the tonic as well as the other kind I used to buy, because I think it got Canada Dry and it tastes like what the British call lemonade, which is a real syrupy soda pop that they call mm-hmm. lemonade. Our lemonade is made with lemons. British lemonade tastes like tonic water that's too sweet. And that's what Canada Dry tastes like to me now. And I actually bitched about it.
You know,
there's half a million dead people. And I didn't like my vodka tonic.
I drank water. I drank one of those canned waters recently where it just feels like a regular soda can or whatever. And it's also like the little milk cartons with water in them. I can't stop feeling, you know, something that's supposed to have a different flavor thing come out of it,
right?
Than water. You know what I mean? I don't like putting a carton up to my mouth because even though in my head, I know I'm about to take a sip of water, it's still weird that it's not milk.
It tastes like cardboard to me when I drink out of those. So weird.
Well, also, yeah, it's just also bringing taste to water that you don't normally, because water, you know, that's the one drink you can often just get it straight into your mouth without anything. If you have a fountain or a hose, you know? So it's weird that we spend so much time putting water into containers when we could just drink it straight out of whatever it's coming out of.
Right? Just guzzle it down. That's the other thing is, are we going back to giving out water in restaurants? I think we are. I got some the other day. Are we going back to buffets and shit?
Okay. Or is that just
out of the, you know, like, you know, you played casinos enough.
Yeah. I was already kind of, you know, out the door on buffets anyway, just because I don't find, you know, I don't find the bargain aspect of it that, you know, like I don't feel like I'm not a person anymore that wants to eat a lot because it's a real money saver. Right. I want to eat what I want, what I need to eat, and then stop.
Yeah.
And so buffets are just, you know, just gross to me on that level. But then, yeah, just the amount of people, you know, just moving around near food that you might be eating. It's just like, you know, is there going to be bar snacks? Are there going to be, you know, peanuts in a bowl at the bar?
Right. Remember peanuts in a bowl, God. Popcorn in a basket.
Yeah. That's going to stop, or they're just going to make sure they have enough of them that you just get, you know, one individually, because they still want to make you, you know, they still want to give you salty shit so you drink more.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of places that would serve peanuts normally at a bar aren't going to care about this stuff enough to stop serving peanuts at a bar.
Right. That's the thing. When I read some survey today, it was about how people are going to behave going forward. And a bunch of people said they're going to carry on wearing their mask, which I'm going to do.
Sure.
But a bunch of people said, oh, they really are going to keep washing their hands more. And it was like, what were you doing before?
Gross. Yeah, gross.
Gross. You were serving me. You were touching me. You were shaking my hand and you didn't wash your hands all the time.
Yeah. I don't like how handshakes are trying to come back. Like every time I do go out lately, if I see somebody I know, they put their hand out to shake it, or even, you know, fans too. I had a guy try to get a selfie with me where he was trying to get me to take my mask off. It's just like, dude, you're lucky that I'll even stand next to you long enough to get a picture.
Yes. It's amazing. I'm elbow bumping everybody, and that's how I just do it now. I come at people with my elbow out.
Yeah. Because you just got to fucking both elbows just run at them.
Right. Zerbert on the belly. That's my new greeting. I heard germs on the tummy don't carry as much for some reason.
Right?
It's fine.
I at my podcast, which I haven't done live since, I don't know, last February or whatever. I mean, in a venue.
Yeah.
I'm a real schmoozer. Like, I mean, Doug's podcast I've done with a million times, and we'll often go out and, fraternize with the people who are coming to the show and get high with them and whatnot. And I would go around the whole audience and shake hands with everybody and give them stickers and schmooze them and take pictures. And I don't know how soon that's coming back, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta be more creative with it, but hopefully the thing that people most want from the experience is the live performance itself, and that the meet and greet aspect is that, you know, that they understand that for the time being, like, I don't want fans being mad that they can't get, you know, photos with us, but I also don't necessarily want to hang out and get photos with everybody, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Not yet.
No, not but, yet.
Or you just set up a thing where, like, you know, hey, do you want a wacky photo where I'm way in the background?
Yeah.
You know, because we could set up something like that. Or like I'm in the foreground and the person's way in the background, like whatever they want. But like, you know, just standing next to each other, because you could say to people, oh, let's just do it quickly, because that's what people are going to say. Well, I'll do it fast. But most people don't know how to take a picture fast.
No, you know, they don't.
They say they're going to, and then there's, oh, but I got to do this. And I got to turn this off.
They've also had drinks, or they're handling somebody else's phone. Yeah.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Right? So, that's the thing.
This stuff was hard enough to navigate when it wasn't a pandemic.
Right? It was, because when we play with a Who's Line group, we obviously, after we finish the show, we come out and people are waiting and they want to meet Ryan and shit and get pictures. And we've took pictures with everybody. We always have. But I wonder now, because Ryan was always ahead of the curve on the germaphobe thing. He carried hand sanitizer all the time. And after we would schmooze with everybody for an hour after the show, he would be doling out hand sanitizer on the bus.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was right to do it, because you just don't want to get sick from touching everybody, which is what you do. Like, it's like you said, Doug, people will go out in public really ill. Mm-hmm. And that's how it, I think, that's why no one's had a cold or a flu in a year, is that no one's doing that now. And they're wearing masks. And when I lived in England, and even whenever I go back, when you go to a theater to see a play or a movie theater or whatnot, the amount of bronchial fucking action in England is just, you know, you sit down and the place goes quiet and then you hear, you know, just everybody starts coughing up. And I was like, oh God, I just thinking about going back to England and playing there, and the amount of unhygienish. They should really wear masks.
Have you, Greg, ever played a character named Doug?
It's a good question.
You've worked
I think
with,
I have.
You've worked with Ileana Douglas a few times, right?
I did. I've worked with, and she goes by ID. We don't call her, we can call her Ileana, but her friends call her ID.
Oh, wow.
That's cute.
Isn't it? And she was nice enough to put me on a show she did called Ileana Lama, which started as like she was working in a supermarket with Jane Lynch and shit. And then it became she worked at IKEA or something.
Yeah.
I played her manager on it, which was really hilarious because she gave me one of the best lines I've ever got to do in a show, which was I burst into the IKEA in my suit and tie looking like a Wilshire Boulevard asshole and go out of my way. I'm the one who put Ileana in Pluto Nash. Which is a hilarious line to write about yourself.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm the one who put it in Pluto Nash and everybody has to shut up. And also she brilliantly used lots of really terrific old time comedians in the show. So it was such a pleasure to be on the set because what's his name? Was it Jack Davis, the one who was on Newhart? Remember him? It was played a really deadpan, and the woman who directed it was one of the women from oh, bloody hell, what's that 90s show that was up in, you know,
Northern,
anyway,
Northern it was,
yeah, that's the one, Mary, what was her name, thanks for getting it in one guess, you would always be working with all fantastic old-time comedians and contemporary, Tom Arnold, I think, did it, I remember spending a whole day with him hanging out, and, you know, I didn't know him, he's really smart, you know. Fun guy to hang out with. He's pretty bright. And
Wayne Fetterman was on it.
Oh, Fetterman, yeah. Fetterman, yeah. Who I love, you know, like Fetterman's one of the great lamb chops of comedy, don't you think? He's just such a right guy. And talented. He can play, he can sing. Like he's a good musician, which not a lot of people, you don't really, he doesn't take advantage of it by being a hack on stage and doing crappy parodies, but he's quite a good musician too, you know. Like Jamie Foxx, I did the Jamie Foxx show years ago, whenever that was on in the 90s. And got to meet Garrett Morris and Garcelle Bouvet and all that. But Jamie, in between takes, would sit down at the piano and play like a fucking demon.
Yeah.
Like, he's a superb musician.
No, he's great. He's probably one of the more, like, he's proving it now by just doing whatever the fuck he feels like doing. Like he can do anything. He's just like, oh, I'll do a game show. I'll do a sitcom. I'll do movies. I'll just do it. And I'll do them all at the same time. Like he's not,
he's really good. He's good looking. He's dead fun.
Yeah.
Which is Jennifer and I always talk about this. Who was it the other day we were saying was overlooked because they were, good looking, especially women that are funny. If they're really good looking, they kind of get overlooked for how fucking funny they are, because you expect a comic to look like you or me. Well, I'm not trying to denigrate our looks, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We look like comics. when you look like, remember Tom McTeigue?
Yeah.
He was really lantern jawed and great looking. He looked like he should play the coach on TV. Like you, hi, you know,
Superman.
As Warren Thomas used to say, Lance Chin Strong.
Yeah.
And so people don't really love it if you're really great looking on stage. If you're a comic, people are kind of like, you have to prove something more. Whereas if you come on and you look like, what's his name? He passed away, Max Alexander, then everybody's really, you laugh the minute you walk out there, you know. If you got that. Hang on, look.
Yeah, he's a big guy, and he always looks sad. He's like kind of like the living version of that Big Al from the Bear Crunchy Jamboree.
Blood on the saddle.
I mean, I still can't get over, like, they talk a lot about how old shit in Disneyland is, you know, is definitely not up to today's woke standards. But, I you know, they took the Country Bear Jamboree out of Disney World finally a few years back. And so it's not in, maybe it's in one of the foreign parks still. I don't know. But just to have a big guy come out and sing a song about, the whole song is about how there was blood everywhere. Yes. There's blood on the saddle. There's blood on the ground. There's blood all around. That's the whole puddle. Song at a children's show.
Oh, my God. What?
It was crazy.
It was so great. I love that. I really loved Country Bear Jamboree. The heads on the wall talked, and then they'd sing at the end, and everybody come out. And what does he say? That the hot lady bear would come down on a swing and sing a song. And then the bear that was the host would go, "I'm going to find a ladder and be right up." It's like fucking vaudeville, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, no, it was totally have sex with the lady bear.
Yeah, it was totally a roaring 20s kind of, you know, prohibition.
Yeah.
Speakeasy review kind of thing.
What is it? Well, he's big around the quarters and he's wide around the rump, making 30 miles an hour, doing 40 feet a jump. Ain't never been caught, he ain't never been treed. Some folks say he looks a lot like me. I think the fucking songs, man.
Whoa.
Old Slewfoot. They sang like classic country songs too. So there was a few
like
straight up country standards.
The whole thing was like 15 minutes long, and they had like, you know, 7 or 8 different acts and a whole band. And then there was this one stupid little bear that would always, you know, at the end of a song at some point would, you know, squeeze his teddy bear and make an annoying noise. But I could talk about Disney stuff all damn day. We have one more question before we get to the next portion of the show, Greg.
Okay.
You're doing great so far. Is there any way you could think of to help us get second gentleman Doug Emhoff as a guest on this show?
Wow. Well,
a tall order, I know.
I know. He's really busy, yeah. My guess. So I don't know that it's a party, but it'd be great. Maybe if you offered him a chance to talk about the agenda, he would do it, you know, because you're a famous comedian with a giant audience and a huge Twitter following.
Whatever he wants.
Right? I mean, but say to him, like, what we want to talk about, you say it's the premises were Doug's, and you are currently the most famous Doug in the country. And, you know, you try him on Twitter.
I did try Twitter, and he just doesn't. I'm sure there's a lot of people poking at
him. Imagine the layers of security around him.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's going to be tough, but, you know, we're asking all the guests just in case somebody goes, "Oh, yeah, I have a cousin who's Doug Emhoff."
Right. And then, I would.
And then we're in, you know.
The closest I can get is that I went to high school with the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm. But that's not exactly it.
No, but that's that's pretty amazing.
She was the queen of our junior prom, and she had Farrah Fawcett hair. This is the 70s.
Yeah.
And great looking woman. And then we went to college together and did a bunch of plays. And then she split. And then the next time I saw her after that was in the early 80s in San Francisco at State. And she said, I said, "Jennifer, what are you doing?" And she went, "I'm going to Bolt. I'm taking law." And I was like, "So no more acting?" And she's like, "I gave up acting." Then cut to, she was elected AG of Michigan twice and then governor twice.
Oh, my God.
So I was playing Dr. Grins in, what's the DeVos town? You know,
Grand Rapids.
The Grand Rapids is like a real red part of Michigan, because it's where Jerry Ford's from, and the DeVos family, everything there is called the DeVos, this, the DeVos, that, like that group of billionaire Nazis. And I'm sure you played Dr. Grins. It's upstairs. There's it smells like burnt pizza. It's fun. It's a fun room. I was on TV, as you do, like, you know, the afternoon, whatever TV show. And I said, I just happened to mention on TV. I said, I went to school with the governor. We went to San Carlos High School together. Next thing I know, my phone rings and there's a message on it. And I said, hey, Greg, it's Jennifer Granholm. Listen, I want to come to the show tonight. Do you think you can get me a table and a couple comps? Call me back at the State House. So I call the State House in Lansing, right? The capital of Michigan. And they go like, Governor's Mansion, you know? And I'm like, yeah. My name's Greg and I'm calling for Governor Granholm. They're like, oh, hang on a second, Greg. And she comes on and she goes, can you give me a table for tonight? I'm like, I'll see what I can do. So I call the club and the guy who ran the club, a nice Midwestern, you know, this is a Midwestern comedy club, not exactly a, you know, a palace. He picked me up in his car, you know, that kind of gig. We've all been at them. Yeah. You know, the manager of the club picks you up in his car. He takes you to the radio and it's the Toyota or whatever. You know, I'm not saying this isn't below me. I'm just saying this is how comedy clubs are.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't come in a big limo or whatever. The dude who runs the club or the guy who runs the kitchen comes and picks you up in their fucking car that's full of garbage. And that's how it works. So I ring him and I say, listen, I have the governor coming tonight. And can I have... And this place is small. I go, could I have a table? He's like, yeah. So I get to the club before the show starts and he's wearing a tie and a coat. And he found a coat and tie and his belongings and he put them on. And I was so cute. And she came with one security guard, one, you know, real low key. And we went in the other room and chatted and she came to the show. And I, you know, ever since then we've been friends. She comes to see me in San Francisco because she's a Bay Area person. And then fantastically, Biden appointed her a Secretary of Energy. So now I see her, you know, on telly and on Twitter and stuff. I mean, I wrote her, you know, but she's kind of busy now. So she doesn't exactly answer me like she used to. But it's pretty awesome.
I guess it's good that you got the heads up, but you'd think the governor could call any comedy club in her state and say, hey, I have a table tonight.
Wasn't that funny?
You know,
I mean, what if Gavin Newsom called him like, Doug, look, I saw your plan. I saw you doing the Brea improv. I'm going to be down there with Jennifer. And I was, you know, can you get me a table and some of that prime rib?
Look, yeah, I could get you some tickets, but you're going to have to get two drinks and some cheese sticks, sir.
Right? And the chicken nuggets?
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you're willing to abide by the minimum, you'll be good.
Right? I don't know that Doug and Kamala know who I am, but I did do a lot of campaigning and online events during the election, because obviously I had the same notion as you guys did, that it's all going to go to hell. So I don't know that they know who I am, but I think they might have a vague notion. Obviously, I'm from San Francisco, and Kamala's a big Bay Area person for 1,000 years. So
Right. There's
a minute chance she might know who I am. I've campaigned for her and been at events, online events and live events. But I've met her, but only like, you know, how you meet a politician, you take a picture with them, you know, you schmooze for a few minutes and then... So not enough that I can call the vice president's office and go, look, I have these cheap friends and I get hired from them. And if you would just tell your husband to do their show, it would be so.
I just, you've humored this question. You've humored us with this question so much more than any other guest. Everyone else is like, how would I be able to help? Next question.
Well, I was trying to think of how I could get to them, you know, like
you really, Yeah, you worked it out for us. And
because I, you know, this White House was way more open. I tried to stump for Hillary, and we even went to Brooklyn and met Christy Yamaguchi, and who was one of her big campaign chairs, and went to her HQ and everything and got vetted. But it wasn't that open. But with Kamala's campaign and Biden's campaign, we didn't get to stump for them directly, but we stumped for Warnock and Ossoff in Georgia, did this giant event with Who's Line and raised a ton of money. And they're really friendly. They were very friendly, and they would actually phone me on my phone and go like, okay, you know, we can't do a Kamala event, but will you do these other events? And of course, it was really important to do the Ossoff and Warnock one because they ended up capturing the balance in the Senate. Those two Democratic senators from Georgia was huge.
Yeah, yeah, that was a huge. Big deal.
And a Black guy and a Jew, are you kidding me? This is the South.
Yeah.
No.
No.
So I was glad to be able to do it. So, you know, like I said, I'm just kind of openly thinking about who I know.
Well, we appreciate you putting so much thought into it, especially a show where we gathered here to ask you questions, and we've prepared, we do every guest that comes on the show, we ask five questions each, we call it five and five, and there's one other thing we have to do before that, and that's we would like you to
eat some leftovers.
That is not pre-recorded. Doug does that live, and it wow. impresses me every time because it sounds like a drop. We ran out of time last show, Greg, and our guest was Moon Zappa.
Oh, yeah.
And much like yourself, she was a terrific guest, lots of great answers to the questions. We didn't get to all of her questions. Doug, you have like two leftover for her?
Yeah. Two left.
Yeah. So we each have two questions left over. And we just like, if you don't mind, we'd like you to answer them since we didn't get time with Moon.
Okay. I'm happy to answer Moon's questions.
Well, we appreciate that because
I like Moon. We're friendly. Yeah, she's always been a really serious friend to comedians.
Absolutely. No, she's a great laugher. And, you know,
I know all the Zappas. They're comedy, they're sort of comedy adjacent.
Yeah, because, you know, Frank Zappa was, his music was, a lot of it was really fun, even though.
Yeah, he was, you know, really funny musician.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that might even come up in the question. So I'm glad you already know enough to maybe answer on her behalf, or you can answer how you would answer, however you'd like to play it. But Doug, go ahead and ask right. Greg your first Moon Zappa question.
First one, Moon/Greg, how many facts did you learn from being on the Facts of Life?
I wasn't on it, but I heard of it. So I've learned a couple of facts.
At least two. That
if birds and bees make love, that's how babies are born with storks.
they said yeah. That was all part of that show?
I think so.
Oh, I thought it was like about a girl's school. I didn't know there was
animals. Oh, that show.
Yeah, Facts of Life.
Tootie was the only one I remember.
Yeah, Tootie, yes.
Natalie.
Oh, Natalie, yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, there was also Street Trash.
That's what I call Joe.
Did they have the same names as the Little Women? There's Joe, there's
Little Meg. Women, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, that's as good an answer as I don't know what Moon would have said to that, but I like Greg's answer. I wanted to ask her, Greg, did they have to get your permission to make that Sam Rockwell movie? Moon.
I assume they did.
Right? Because you can't just go around going, hey, we made this thing called Moon when there's a person.
Right.
Right Moon, there Moon. Named Moon that could just be like, hey, hold on. That's my name.
They also had to reach out to former quarterback Warren Moon.
What if the working title was Moon Unit and they got him to drop unit in a lawsuit? See, this is the kind of fun we would have had with Moon if we didn't run out of time. Doug, what else have you got?
All right, last leftover from Moon Zappa. Is Pterodactyl Woman from Beverly Hills based on a true story?
My understanding is it is. That she lived in a rocky crag above Beverly Hills and would swoop down and you could hear the beating of her slate gray wings.
It's a typical LA story.
Oh, very much so. Just a classic Hollywood tale.
That was all pretty fun for me because I didn't understand the question or the answer.
Me neither.
Oh, Moon was in a movie called Pterodactyl Woman from Beverly Hills. It's a trauma picture. Trauma? Trauma. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It looks wild. It's got Beverly D'Angelo in it and a few other people. It looks out of control.
Awesome.
Okay. I can't believe I missed that in her filmography when I was going through it. My last question is a Frank Zappa-based question for her. Ooh. I wanted to ask, in the song Valley Girl, you popularized the expression, gag me with a spoon. And my question to her was going to be, but have you ever gagged with a spoon?
No, I think it's a figure of speech.
But why would one... I don't understand why it's a figure of speech, I guess.
I don't know. I think it was just great comedy. I was thinking of it the other day for no reason. Because what was it she says in the song? He's like Lord God King Bufu. That line always made me laugh.
Yeah, she's
always, a teenager. My archer's who always said, playing with his rings.
She's a teenager who made up a bunch of silly things, and then her dad was like, yeah, let's put this into a song.
Yeah.
It was great, but I lived it and I never understood gagging with a spoon as an expression. I mean, I guess it's just a way, I guess, you know, what's her name? Cher in Clueless updated that one to just merely as if. I think gagging with a spoon and as if mean the same thing.
I love that movie so much.
So good.
It's really good. And funnily enough, the place I kept hearing as if the most was always England. In England, they always said as if. Huh. And then I guess it got popular here with... Clueless really holds up to us. Other than one or two sexist things here and there, it's a pretty groovy movie. I still laugh my ass off at it.
Yeah. No, it's really... It was just very clever the way she, you know, made Emma palpable for everybody.
I think that Amy Heckerling is a wildly underrepresented director, and the fact that she made Fast Times and Clueless, which are both classics and both still hold up and have real issues in them, she should have had a lot more pictures, I believe.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
She's dead funny writer and director.
Yeah, that's part of the issue with being not only a director but a woman directing. Like you're not going to necessarily get. You know, she can't crank out scripts. So she's, you know, going to have to direct things that are just more like she's just there to do the job. And then she gets the blame when those movies are dumb. But I think she's great. And thank you for eating those leftovers. are you full?
Yes.
Because we have five questions for you. And this is a record breaker here on Wide World of Dougs. We have one commercial break in the show and it's usually in the middle, but on this one, it's happening 50 some minutes into the performance. We'll be right back.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back. We're here with Greg Proops, and Doug Mellard has written five questions. I've written five questions, but there's no way we're going to get to all of them, but let's just, let's get through, you know, as many as we can. And we'll start with you, Doug. What's your first question for Greg Proops and Greg Proops only?
All right. As a baseball fan, what is the greatest baseball moment you've witnessed live in the stands? Anything historical?
Well, live is, because I wasn't at the three times my San Francisco Giants won the World Series because they were, that wasn't live in the stands. So to answer your question directly, me and Warren Thomas were at a playoff game in 2002, and Benito Santiago, who was catcher for the Giants and had major injuries that season, whatnot, hit a home run to win the game. And I remember we turned to each other and then we just got up and started dancing.
Did you make it to the cam?
Right? With a kiss cam?
Yeah. Oh man, that's rad.
But that was just one. I could think of a lot of other.
Yeah, you're Giants. I grew up a Rangers fan, so your Giants are part of the reason I've almost given up on baseball, because they've never been the same since 2010 and 11.
Boy, I had a great routine about the 2010 Rangers. And then they went back the next year and lost again, which was just awesome.
Yeah, then they were done.
Yeah. What's his name? Who was your big star right fielder who was a clean and sober?
Hamilton, yeah. Josh Hamilton.
Josh. And he came to San Francisco for the first game, right? And the city is a whole nother bag for sports. The Giants fans like smoke weed, like outside the park. Yeah. And because there's only a screen that, there's that knothole gang thing in right field, it blows into the park. And he was losing his mind that people,
he plays
in Arlington, man. Arlington. And he was like, people are smoking weed out in the fucking field. And he was trying to be clean and sober, which he's dropped off the wagon a few times.
But yeah.
That one made me cry laughing. And I'm like, dude, you're in our town now. Yeah. Let me hand my bong to this lesbian policeman for a second while I,
God.
You got to understand. And what was the other joke? I go, they show San Francisco and the ballpark at night, and it looks like an emerald in a bed of jewels with the bay spread out like a poem all around it. And then when they went back to Texas, they showed them, like, here's the stockyards.
Yeah, that's about right. No offense taken being from
Texas. No, San Francisco from the air and that where the ballpark is looks like a dream.
Right.
And Arlington Stadium is in that giant car park.
Yeah.
And it's next, buddy. And the huge bas reliefs on the walls of white people driving cattle across the Indians' territory. It's just so fantastically white people. Only Texas would have giant friezes on the side of the stadium of white people conquering the West.
Oh my God. Thanks.
Well, that was a great answer. Yeah, and of course, now we're out of time. We'd like to thank you for joining us today, Greg. Let's do a couple more just for the, let's go a few minutes long. Yeah. Cause it's okay. I don't know if Greg has figured this out, but the gag is every week we run out of time. And, so that we can ask the next guest, because it's just fun to ask people questions that weren't meant for them. So here's a question that I was going to ask Jerry O'Connell when he was on a few weeks ago, or maybe months ago. I forget how long it's been now, but he was like walking his dog and arrived late. There was a lot going on with Jerry that day. So we didn't get to any of Jerry's questions. So what I was going to do today was just ask you Jerry's questions because I knew you'd be great at this. So here's the first one I was going to ask Jerry, but now I'm asking you is you appeared on the Broadway stage with the late, great Alan Rickman. Please do an impression of him saying something to you, like maybe, advice that he gave you at some point.
Mm-hmm. If you get off on the name or quarterback parts, I suggest you drop it.
Yeah, I bet you that you did much better Alan Rickman than Jerry would have done.
That was pretty great.
The thing to do was holding it for you.
My late friend, John Sessions, who passed in the last year, was one of the original stars on Whose Line, had a hilarious, he was a wonderful impressionist. And he gave the key to doing Alan Rickman, which is act like your lips can't touch your teeth. So you talk like this.
Oh, wow.
Right. Teach the season. What does he say? It is the holiday season, so be of good cheer.
John McClane.
Robin of Locksley.
It is fun trying to talk without your...
just do it and you'll do a much better job.
Yeah, because he had like a real, almost like kind of a horse's mouth kind of, yes, the way his lips would wrap around what he was saying.
Now I have a gun. Her.
Oh man, way better than Jerry. All right, do you have another quick Greg question, Doug?
Yeah, I'll do here's a quick one. Fuck, marry, kill: Frosted Flakes, Lucky Charms, Wheaties.
I love Lucky Charms. I haven't eaten them in 100 years, so those I would copulate with. What was the other two?
Wheaties and Frosted Flakes.
Wow, Wheaties and Frosted Flakes.
I was going to say, did you write it down?
Yes.
Right? Wheaties and Frosted Flakes are the same cereal, but one has sugar on it.
Right.
Right? So aren't they like the exacts? I don't know which one to marry. All right, I'm gonna marry the Frosted Flakes and kill the Wheaties, I guess.
Kill the healthier one.
Well, because yeah. I don't, the Wheaties puts NASCAR drivers on their boxes, and I don't think that's sport.
I love that that's the reasoning.
Yeah,
that's great. I love it.
That's a great reason. I got one more quick one. I think you'll get this right, Greg. This for Jerry. I was going to ask him, which of your movies has this tagline: "He stole the money and he's not giving it back."
Wow. This is a Jerry O'Connell one?
Mm-hmm.
A Jerry O'Connell movie that he's in.
Yeah, he stole the money, and he's not giving it back.
It's not Jerry Maguire, I know that.
No.
Although that would have been a great tagline for that movie, because it makes no sense whatsoever. I don't know the name of the Jerry O'Connell movie, so I'm going to have to make it up. It's Bank Heist.
That's a series on Netflix?
Oh, that's Money Heist.
Oh,
and then it's the Spanish show, The Money Heist, which is hilarious because the actual Spanish name of the show is called Paper Music. I mean, they put the name of the show up in Spanish, and it has nothing to do with Money Heist.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they just changed it completely.
Yeah, just gave it a cooler sounding name, because there was a movie I didn't watch it, but because of the name, and then it starred Kelsey Grammer, but it was I think it was called Plane Heist.
Right.
It's like, Plane just doesn't heist. Get any more basic than that.
Well, we didn't think of anything. Yeah. I liked all those Richard Gere movies from the late 80s and early 90s, because it was always like, you know, continuous problem. It was always some weird phrase that was supposed to indicate, you know, unrest or a lawsuit or an unhappy couple, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Unresolvable solution.
Yeah, and like police expressions, you know, like what do they call it when they investigate their own? He was always internal affairs.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it was about affairs of both kinds. Wow. This has been so much fun, Greg. I can't believe that we have so many questions for you left on the table, but we'll try to ask the next person on down the line. Would you like to promote anything particular at this time?
My podcast is Smartest Man in the World. That's at gregbruce.com. I have a show on Saturday at the Nowhere Comedy Club with Ben Glebe. It's the 1 year anniversary. We do a little improv show together called It's a G Thing. You can go to my website, gregbruce.com, or Nowhere Comedy Club. That'll be on Saturday at 5. And then I'm doing a Nowhere Comedy Club podcast of my show on the 18th. The 18th is a Friday at 5 p.m. I will be doing that from the Porpoise of Fruititude, and that will be on camera. And like that.
Right.
So that's what I'm plugging. Oh, and Who's Line will go back on the road in October. So if you go to Who's Live anyway, we're selling tickets for shows in the autumn.
Tell Ryan to stock up on that. Too.
Right on the hand sanitizer.
Yeah, and it's hand sanitizer.
The last gig we did together was not last year. It was 2020. And it was March 8th in Anacortes, wow. Washington. And I remember he came on. Oh, we did Seattle, the Moore Theater, like on the 6th or 7th.
Oh, yeah.
And he came on with a whole roll of toilet paper wrapped around his head as a joke, right? Like, because people were starting to wear masks.
Oh, my God.
And I remember that. And that we were sanitizing the microphones. That was our big way to not get it.
Yeah.
And then everybody ran out of toilet paper and he...
Right? And then we got on a bus on the 11th or 12th to go to Escondido or somewhere to do a gig. A bunch of what we hilariously in comedy call local gigs, meaning it was like Lancaster, Escondido, you know, which of course are nowhere near LA. And Jennifer said to me, I don't understand why you guys are doing this. Why are you going on this tour? And I said, because I'm in a group and, you know. By lunchtime, they had banned gatherings of over 1,000 people. So we went and ate lunch and we came right back home.
Oh my God.
Because we were playing 4 theaters that weekend, all of which held more than 1,000 people. Wow. I was like, well, no, 1,000 people can't be in a room together.
Jeez.
Damn.
So, yep. Well, I'm looking forward to going back into a room.
Yeah. And people can, you know, do that kind of optimistic purchase right now and find when they're coming to your town and get tickets. And then that means the pandemic will stay away because everybody's got such a positive attitude. Doug Mellard, what do you got to plug?
I'm going to be starting a monthly stand-up show in Austin at the Buzz Mill with my buddy Mike Weeby called Excelsior. So it's going to start July 1st. So check it out.
What, first, it's a weekly show. What night?
Monthly. Every
night of the month.
Every first Thursday of the month.
First Thursday of every month. What are you like? what are you like on the Supreme Court? Isn't that when they convene? I'm going to be doing Doug Loves Movies in front of an actual live but small audience on Wednesday. Really? Yeah, on Wednesday, June 9th at the Brea Improv. So. Tickets are on sale for that now.
How many people are they going to put in?
I think it's they're going to allow 64 tables of, you can either have 2 at your table or 4 at your table. Oh. And depending on the size of your party, you can't join up with other people that are like in your bubble.
I did a podcast with the GM of the Helium in Portland, Nick. We know that I love the Helium in Portland. I'm sure you do too. And he said they were having it 70 people in. That's how many they're allowing.
Yeah. Every club's got like their, you know, their own rules. They have to deal with their own city and state and just their own, you know, their own personal choices. Cause you know, I know I wouldn't want to run a place that, you know, somebody goes, oh, by the way, that show the other night was a super spreader event or whatever.
Right.
You just don't know what's going to happen. Now we got through this holiday weekend without, you know, I haven't heard much talk of massive gatherings that were unsafe, but I'm sure there were some, so we'll see what we'll just see what happens.
Right.
And, but thank you, Greg, for bringing this hour of sunshine into our lives.
Thank you.
Thank you, darlings.
And as always, who's Doug is it anyway?
Got it.